Call for Action presents Of Consuming Interest, a public service show that discusses scams, deceptive offers, and other consumer concerns. Here's the director of WJLA 7 Call for Action and your host, Shirley Rooker.
Net neutrality has a nice sound to it, but it certainly has caused a big firestorm in the media. The pros and the cons. Well, we're going to discuss what net neutrality is and why it's being re-examined by the Federal Communications Commission. My guest today is Randolph J. May. He is the president of the Free State Foundation and has experience. He was a former FCC commissioner. We're going to go into all of that. Randy, welcome to Of Consuming Interest.
Shirley, thank you. It's an honor to be with you. I've been an admirer of yours for a long time, so I'm really pleased to be on your program.
You say the right things. I like all that. I won't ask you to repeat it, but I'll keep rerunning it. Okay, thank you. Let's talk about some of this, Randy. I really got conscious of this. Back in May, I read an article in the Washington Times on net neutrality. And of course, as someone who's in a consumer group, it always has interested me as to what it was and what we were trying to fix and what were the results that were going to occur as a result of the ruling that came out in 2015 under the Tom Wheeler when he was the chair of the FCC. So, but first, let's go back and just talk about you. You were with the FCC, and you served as a commissioner there, I believe. Is that correct?
No, that would have been nice, but I was never a commissioner. But I did serve at the FCC, and I was associate general counsel.
Okay, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Okay.
88 to 81, but I don't want to have that an urban myth started.
No, we won't do that. We take that all back.
Right.
All right. Okay, so let's go. So you were with the FCC as Associate General Counsel, and we're going to talk about what started the impetus, the movement to do something about controlling the internet, because it seemed to have been working fine, but what were the concerns that caused the FCC to start looking at taking more control of the internet? Were there problems? Had things happened? What was going on?
Let me give you and the listeners some background to this. It's somewhat long and complicated story that I think simplify mostly. Initially the internet, of course, there was government support in the early days, with the funding of the networks that subsequently became what we know today as the internet back in the early days. But when the internet as we know it now, if I might call it the commercial, internet post government subsidy internet, when that developed, there was really a bipartisan consensus that began in the Clinton administration that the internet should be lightly regulated by the government, and that the government shouldn't control it and interfere with its development. And that's essentially the way that things were for a long time. Sometime in the early 2000s, there were people that began to talk about the need to ensure that the internet remained neutral and that there was not discrimination among providers that were part of the internet or other competitors. At that time, there weren't problems that were evident. So in the discussions about the potential for harm and the potential for discrimination, all of the discussion really took place in terms of what might possibly happen or, conjectures about what could develop in terms of these harms.
But just to be clear, there was no evidence of any of these things having occurred, but there was concern that they might.
Yeah, that's that is...
Isn't that a little bit reversal of the rulemaking process normally?
Well, it's a reversal, generally, of the way we think about what regulatory...
To solve problems, yeah.
To solve problems. Now, I do want to say, to be clear, that over time, there were three or four incidents that are cited, and I'm talking about a period of about 10 years,
mm-hmm.
that could be characterized as ones where there was some interference or some conduct by an internet service provider. You know, we're talking here, when we talk about this net neutrality thing, we're talking about the internet service providers like Comcast
mm-hmm.
or
those. Telephone companies, cable companies, all of those.
Mm-hmm. All of those. And, you know, there were really three incidents where there either was or there may have been, you know, some type of interference. For example, one involved Comcast and allegations that it slowed down a peer-to-peer file sharing network that may have competed with one of its own offerings. That became known, and actually just by virtue of the public, and this is important to understand, by virtue of the public, you know, reaction among, you know, the internet activists, what we call sometimes the net activists, Comcast actually quickly stopped doing what was alleged to be interfering and a violation of so-called net neutrality. And there were one or two other things like
mm-hmm.
And in each one of these cases, actually, the interesting thing is they were resolved without the FCC having any regulation in place, but they were resolved by virtue of them becoming known to the public and the pressure, you know, from people that were interested in these things.
It's amazing what exposure can do to make companies walk things back. So, yeah.
I know you're an expert on that, and you're an example, actually, of how that type of thing works and the power that consumers...
So there were some companies that kind of pushed the button to see how far they could go, and then they reversed course when they discovered that the public reaction was not a favorable one. Of course, that could end up costing them business. And the bottom line often drives these... Well, most of the time, I think it drives these decisions. So we're looking at an environment then where the internet is functioning. There are people who are developing concern. Who was pushing... are there groups that were pushing for greater regulation? I mean organized groups. I know that most general consumers probably didn't even know what the discussion was about.
No, I think that's fair to say. You know, there are groups
You know what? Before you answer that question, let me just take a pause here to let our listeners know they're tuned into Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Randolph J. May. He is the president of the Free State Foundation. He's also its founder. It's a nonprofit think tank which looks into a variety of issues, promoting free market, property rights, and etc. Okay, Randy, I'm sorry to have interrupted you.
Yeah, no, there are some groups, and they characterize themselves as, public interest groups or pro-consumer groups. And for example, one is called Free Press. It's kind of to me, they're actually the opposite of Free Press, because they generally favors so much government control, not actually only of the internet, but other forms of media. But another one is called Public Knowledge, but without really, you know, questioning the
motive. Of course.
Groups. Right. The point is, they are advocates for more government control over the.
Okay, now here's the question: were there corporations that were backing these groups?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was well known, for example, that Google was a supporter of these groups. I think perhaps Amazon
mm-hmm.
Groups that, and so the next logical question might be, well, why would those companies be?
How would they benefit exactly?
Supporting net neutrality, and surely I think the answer is because they. they feared, or they said they were concerned, that they might be subject to discrimination because the companies like the Comcast, for example, or Verizon or AT&T, whomever, that they might throttle or slow down or somehow discriminate against the services of a Google to favor their own service. Now, you know, I will admit that in theory, you know, that's a legitimate
concern. If you got a business and you need to be
legitimate
concerned.
Concern, and right. we actually have antitrust laws that actually police that type of conduct as well. Mm-hmm. But if we just look at it from the jurisdiction of the FCC, that might be a legitimate concern. But you know, some problems with that go to how you address it, how you want to go about addressing it, and whether if you have a competitive marketplace, one that's becoming increasingly competitive like the internet service provider marketplace was, whether the balance shifts in terms of developing regulatory policy to not adopting in advance of any actual demonstrated harm. Mm-hmm. Except, you know, I acknowledge there were just only a couple instances over a decade. But yeah. in the absence of, you know, of acknowledged market failure or, you know, demonstrated consumer harms, the question becomes whether you then adopt what we call prescriptive anticipatory regulations, you know, based on things that might happen or that could happen versus waiting to see whether those things develop, and then take actions after they do.
Those to correct the actual problems, not the ones that you fear. I hear what you're saying. Now you've been on the record saying that you're not against regulation. It depends on to government oversight, I should say. And but your concern has been with the rulings that came out of the FCC in 2015. Now, in the article you'd written, you mention a couple of the things that you thought were the worst and most restrictive in terms of internet development. And you go on to cite that there has, in fact, been a pullback of things that are developing and investment in the internet. Before we get into that, let's talk about the two things that caused you the greatest concern. And the one of them had to do with the classification of the internet providers. Tell us what that is, because I don't truly understand it.
And it's really an important key to the whole debate and where we are now. So let's talk about it. Up until this 2015 order that was adopted under the President Obama's FCC administration, the internet providers were classified under the Telecom Act as information service providers. That was a classification that was included in the 1996 Telecom Act.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a major revision of the
Act. Yes, it was.
And that classification is distinct from and actually mutually exclusive with another category called the telecommunications carriers,
meaning the phone companies.
And that means exactly the phone companies. They're basically common carrier. What we think of as common carriers.
Mm-hmm.
You have those two different classifications, and the Wheeler Commission basically reversed the existing classification of information services, which were lightly regulated. And we could talk about some of what that means, but essentially it was not, they were not regulated in a prescriptive, rigid way. The Wheeler reversed that, and as telecommunications carriers, that essentially made them like public utilities. I mean, that is acknowledged by the supporters of net neutrality of Wheeler's form.
So that means that there's a lot more government control and prescription of what you can do, handing down from the government to these service providers.
And more specifically, what it means, and the traditional core of public utility regulation involved two things primarily: rate regulation and a non-discrimination obligation.
So that all users or consumers are treated the same.
Yeah, and that makes sense, really. At least most people would agree, and I'm.
I have no problem with that. Right.
To that point, in a monopoly situation, okay. Generally, I mean that's generally when public utility regulation is applied. We have that with water, electricity. And at one point it was applied to the railroads and airlines. Now, subsequently there were other forms of modes of competition that emerged, and as you probably recall, those modes of transportation were then deregulated because of competition. But generally, we could say that public utility regulation makes sense in a monopoly environment, and in fact, that was the case, of course, with the
telephone companies and Ma Bell.
Exactly, Ma Bell.
Absolutely.
Words out of my mouth with Ma Bell. The problem is that Wheeler took this form of public utility regulation and applied it to internet service providers. In today's environment, and the commission did it, and this is an important point again, without real evidence of a market
of a failure. Okay, let's just take a brief pause here to let our listeners know they're tuned into Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Randolph J. May. He is the president of the Free State Foundation, a nonprofit think tank, and we're discussing the internet and what we mean by net neutrality. Okay, so we saw the move was made to regulate a market, a huge market, based on what was concerned, or let's put the critics say, that there was no real evidence that there was real problems going on. So what was the result of the changes that were made by the FCC? I believe you stated in your article that there has been less investment in the internet, in developing, in innovation. Is that going too far?
No, I don't think it goes too far, Shirley, but if I can...
Sure, clarify for me, please.
Actually just add the other element that was most troubling.
Okay.
2015 order. We talked about the classification as public utilities, and that's really foremost.
That puts it under a much more restricted category.
And one thing that is interesting, I think for your listeners is that the FCC, originally had defended when there were attempts made earlier to argue that the internet providers should not be information service but telecom carriers, because this had been going on, as I said initially, for quite a while. So the FCC made a determination that broadband internet service providers were information services. It actually defended that decision all the way up to the Supreme Court, and in 2005 the Supreme Court ruled that in fact they were information service providers. So that was the FCC's view really at that time. Now the other aspect of the 2015 regulations that perhaps was most troubling after the reclassification was the institution of something called a good conduct rule.
That sounds good.
Yeah, it sounds good unless you're suspicious of rules that are, based on undefined conduct. It reminds me of
what is it, and how do you know it when you see it?
Oh, Shirley, when I was at Duke University a long, long, long time ago, I was an undergraduate, and there was just a rule called you couldn't do anything that was conduct unbecoming of a Duke gentleman.
And what was that?
You constantly had to try and figure out where that line was.
What was the line? Okay.
But in this case, so the good conduct rule essentially said only this, that the internet service providers could not unreasonably discriminate against competitors or harm consumers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's that, again, that's sort of the essence.
That's a, but that's kind of a subjective thing rather than having objectives there, isn't it? I mean, we're rapidly running out of time. I can't believe the time is flying so fast. Now, I mentioned earlier that the FCC is looking at, I believe, at changing these regulations and have taken steps to start that process. What are they looking to do? What are the main things? We only have about two, three minutes, Randy.
Okay. The two things that they're looking to do foremost are reverse the classification.
Back to where it was so that it's no longer considered a telecommunications company.
And that would
gotcha.
Be
okay.
A public utility regulation and eliminate the good conduct rule. And one of the foremost reasons, and you've alluded to this, but I just want to emphasize it, is there's been evidence already that there's been an adverse impact on investment from this more rigid form of...
Well, your foundation did a study to that effect, didn't they?
Well, we've done quite a bit of research on it. We estimated that there was a $5.1 billion decline in investment.
Wow.
For what you otherwise would have expected it to be absent the regulations.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you're trying to do, you know, as producer.
Based upon the growth of what had happened prior to the regulation.
Mm-hmm. It would have happened. And, you know, again, I acknowledge always try and be fair about this and look at both sides. It's difficult to, you know, isolate one thing. There could have possibly been other things. But
sure.
We looked at the trend line of, you know, what was...
Well, let's put it this way. It's enough to cause concern at seeing a very robust area of our economy suddenly really taking a high hit.
Well, yeah, because, you know, as we all know, we keep demanding, you know...
More and more.
More and more, we consume more video. Of course, a lot of it is these days increasingly, surely, is done with our smartphones.
Oh, yes, of course.
Even watching videos. And one of the things the FCC, another thing the FCC did in 2015 was apply these net neutrality rules in the very same form to the mobile providers that applied to the landline providers, and that was seen, you know, by a lot of people as even more troubling, simply because it's much different running a mobile network and with the bandwidth being
sure.
limited and trying to manage that network, surely. So you know, that's troubling. But essentially, you hit the nail on the head. I mean, ultimately, you need investment to keep building out faster, higher bandwidth networks. So it's a concern if the regulations have the effect of stifling that. I mean, there's been over $1.5 trillion expended since 2005 by the Internet service providers.
That's a lot bigger than my budget, Randy.
Yeah.
You know, we're rapidly running out of time. This has been a fascinating discussion. I really... Thank you for taking the time to share it with us. Unfortunately, we're going to have to end this lively and interesting discussion. But I want to thank you, and just to let our listeners know that they've been tuned in to Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. And my guest has been Randolph J. May, who is president of the Free State Foundation. You can find them on the internet. Just go to the Free State Foundation, and there they are. They've got lots of information. And I want to thank you for joining us. If you want to get in touch with me, my email address is shirley@callforaction.org. And we thank you. You've been listening to us right here, as I said, on 1500 AM.
Of Consuming Interest is a public service program presented by WJLA 7 Call for Action, hosted by Shirley Rooker. Call for Action is an international nonprofit network of hotlines which offer free and confidential assistance. If you have a complaint, contact Call for Action at 301-652-HELP. That's 301-652-HELP.